Welcome to Radio Economica on DGT Radio. We have the pleasure of having Mr. Jorge Valero with us. Good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Happy to have you for a topic that you have been working on for a good while. And you mentioned it to me, which is about digital finance. I think discussed the issue with you before of bitcoins and cryptocurrencies, but you've come with something different this time. It's about policy initiatives by the European Commission. Perhaps you could remind us briefly what you mean by digital finance.
Yes, sure. So digital finance, there are two big aspects that are transforming the financial services. And at the same time, of course, the action plan and the initiatives of the EU legislators and the Commission, which is the impact on this sector of digitization and green agenda. So we're going to focus today on the digital aspect. This is truly transforming how the financial services work, and we see this on a daily basis with the apps on our phones or with the bitcoins around us, and even the so-called open banking and open finance, which is the next step. And basically, the big transformation is how our data it's used by financial players, and at the end of the day, it's to offer better services to customers, to clients, and to create new innovative businesses, either for by creating this so-called fintech, which is a mix of digital and finance, so meaning like digital companies providing financial services, offering, as I said, services to other companies or to customers. And here, I mean, there are two specific steps that the Commission was working on to regulate. And finally, this September, the EU executive put forward proposals. One of them is the cryptocurrencies, which is these digital currencies, these digital coins are some examples are, for example, Bitcoin and the Facebook project called Libra that I will talk about more in a minute. These digital currencies basically are means of payment. They provide cheaper payment services, also almost instant payment services. The problem is that they are also used by speculators, even for money laundering purposes, and even to finance terrorism, because they provide anonymity to those who want to make payments online, which is the big advantage, because when you make a digital payment, the problem is that they always leave a digital trace. But in the case of the digital of these cryptocurrencies, the advantage is that they don't leave any digital trace because of the technology behind, which is blockchain. And I mean, this will give this is another point that will let us talk for half an hour, even more, how blockchain works. But just to summarize, it's basically decentralized network that sustains these assets. So nobody is responsible for clearing the payments, so nobody holds centrally the information.
It's what they call peer-to-peer, right?
It's not really peer-to-peer, because peer-to-peer will be, kind of it's peer-to-peer, but because it's among equals, let's say. But here we're talking about truly a big network of computers with no central authority. So what happened is that the Commission was working on this, how to regulate these crypto assets, because, as I said, they can provide a lot of bring a lot of innovation, but at the same time they bring a lot of risks in terms of volatility, in terms of money laundering, so on and so forth. For example, volatility was a very clear example. Bitcoin, the market valuation, the ups and downs that we witnessed over the past 5 years with this crypto asset. So the Commission was working for the last 2 years on how to regulate these cryptocurrencies. The progress was very slow because they needed a lot of technical work, assessment with regulators, so on and so forth. But then something changed. And the trigger was, or the big change was that Facebook announced last summer, sorry, summer 2018, that they were gonna issue their own cryptocurrency. But this cryptocurrency was a special one because it was a stable coin, so-called stable coin, which means that their digital asset was gonna be backed by a basket of sovereign currencies. So of course that will have an impact on financial stability and could have an impact on even on the on the monetary sovereignty of nations. So it had it sparked a lot of concerns about among central bankers, among financial institutions, among regulators, and there was a very big backlash. And for example, the G7, the EU finance ministers all came forward against the Facebook project, basically mentioning monetary sovereignty concerns and also financial stability concerns. And that was also a wake up, sort of a wake up call for the Commission to work harder on its cryptocurrencies proposal, which finally was published in September. So the basic principle of this cryptocurrency proposal is that, well, as Vice President Dombrovskis, who has been working on on financial services until actually recently, because now the commissioner in charge of it is going to be Mrs. McGuinness, the commission, sorry, Dombrovskis, defended the principle of having, of course, a proper set of rules to address the risk, but at the same time not to over-regulate because that could kill innovation. And Europe is catching up in a lot of fields, especially in the digital sphere, compared with other parts of the world. So the problem is that if you over-regulate, you will kill a nascent market. So that's why what Dombrovskis proposed was having stricter rules for those cryptocurrencies that were more risky. For example, of course, Libra, but having a more lighter approach for those cryptocurrencies that were smaller and less, let's say, less systemic. And that was the bottom line. So basically, this cryptocurrency proposal included several requirements, both for authorization, for supervision, for these assets. For example, those who issue cryptocurrencies, they have to to submit a white book with all the financial information. Features and details about their project and who is behind, in order for regulators to assess whether, I mean, they fulfill all the criteria, and also for consumers to have an informed decision of what they're getting. But also, for example, the rules are stricter for those digital currencies that are backed by a real currency, like for example the euro, the dollar, which is the case of Libra. So in this case, the first requirement, in fact, is that they have to become credit institutions for them to be able to issue these digital versions of currencies. So that means that from the start they will have supervision as if it was a financial product, so stricter supervision. And then the more systemic ones like Libra, because I mean, we have to remember that Facebook has 2.7 billion customers around the world, so users around the world. So that means that the users of Libra could be potentially 2.7 billion, which is it's crazy. I mean, it's it will be the most common currency, even if digital, in the world. Maybe, I mean, I don't know if whether the dollar is used on a daily basis that much, but I highly doubt it. I doubt it. I mean, of course, because if it's used in say some markets and as an reserved currency, but not at that scale on a daily basis, let's say. So then Facebook will be subject to a supervision. Sorry, Libra will be subject to a supervision, which will be led by it will be led by the European Banking Authority. But then there will be a new body of like a super watcher, which will involve the banking authority, but also the ESMA, which is in charge of the market supervision. It will involve the European Central Bank. It will involve national supervisors, national central banks. So it will be like a super body to oversee these more systemic currencies. Yes, there will be also, of course, sanctions to of course, in case the crypto assets don't fulfill the criteria to be to operate, and that could include, for example, withdrawing the authorization to be functional in the internal market. And there, I mean, now we can discuss more, of course, the details of this proposal, and I will tell you in a moment about the open finance proposal. But here, it's very important to take into account as well that the Libra was a wake-up call not only for regulators to strengthen the supervision and the regulation of these cryptocurrencies, but also for central bankers to consider whether they should issue their own digital currencies. And this is the very interesting, actually, aspect of the whole debate, because the European Central Bank and other national banks are already working on digital versions of their own currencies. European Central Bank is working on a digital euro. It's not gonna be easy. It's not gonna be. It's not something that is gonna see the light of day soon. But I will tell you more about. I will tell you now more about what could be the consequences of this, because basically it could be a major earthquake for the banking system. I think you wanted to ask me something. But I cannot hear you.
Yes, I was waving.
No.
Just a quick question. What is really the distinction between, for example, Libra and a bank? I mean, in a few words, how would you differentiate? I've been reading your article, and you say, of course, Libra under the new supervision rules would not be able to deliver, for example, interest. What else can they or can they not do that a bank would?
Libra should be used only as a means of payment, as a payment service. It shouldn't be used. It shouldn't yield any interest, because that will turn Libra into an investment product, for example. At the same time, Facebook or Libra is not gonna, or might not be, well, I mean, that's to be seen, because we don't know many details of Libra, but whether it's gonna provide credits, for example. But because of all of that and all the potential ramifications, the European regulators want to have a very cautious approach and regulate it as if it's a banking, let's say, banking institution, like a creditor is the creditor. So that will imply stricter rules. So it won't be only like a payment platform, for example, other fintechs, apps that we see today will be, it will have a stricter approach. Also because of its systemic nature, as we said before. And here, what I wanted to add to the what I was saying on the digital euro that the European Central Bank is working on, and referring to what you were asking about banks, we have to think that once the European Central Bank issue digital euros, that will mean that will go, because the central bank is already doing digital euros, but it's that is for banks, because that's where they take notes of the let's say in their accounts how many euros they have provided by the central bank. But now the central bank will do that with the, I don't know how many citizens there are in the eurozone, but to the 350, let's say, a million citizens of the eurozone. So basic in practice, every citizen will have their deposits account in the central bank. So that means that if you are a citizen, you will prefer to have your, let's say, savings account or your deposit account in the central bank, a European central bank, than in any other bank, because it will be safer. But of course, the consequences for the banking system as an intermediary of the financial operations will be huge. I mean, here there are a lot of details that the ECB actually is. The ECB is very much aware of the consequences that this could have, and they are working very slowly. And that's why they say that they are having, you know, like, I mean, they know that the end station has to be that, but they need to fine-tune the proposal. For example, whether we will have access to digital euros only if they use them, or do we turn our savings accounts in other banks into digital euros, or we will have a double account of digital euros and non-digital euros. There are many things there to be solved. And this, as I said, it will have a big impact on banks, but even more if we put this together with the other proposal that I wanted to talk about today, which is the open finance ones. Because basically, this will mean that banks will have to open up even further their data, their customers' data, and share it with other financial players and even other sectors. And of course, opening the data is basically the most important asset nowadays in the digital economy. But the important thing here is that not only banks will open up their data, it will be also other financial players. Because the goal is not only open banking, it's open finance. And at the same time, if the goal is to have a true open data market, that will mean that not only the financial sector will share the data, but also, for example, other sectors like the utilities sector or the energy sector. So at the end, it's the goal will be to have like a more, let's say, customer-oriented data market. So basically, you as a user will have easy access to all your data, which will be shared by the energy company, the banks, and everything. And you could have easy ways to pay your bills, but also, for example, to hire different services with let's say, a single window. So and new services could even flourish from there that we don't know yet. But we have to, I mean, the starting point of this proposal, it's the Payment Service Directive 2, I mean, the revision of the Payment Service Directive 2, which, as you might remember, it had a huge impact on the banking sector. We have to remember that this directive, when it was reviewed, forced banks to share their customers' data, especially all related to pay the payment service, to third parties. The result was that over the past years, few years, we saw an explosion of fintech companies, apps, so on and so forth, that they provide payment services. For example, we see that with our phones. We see that with our open banking system, that even in our banks we can pay our bills and manage different we can manage different accounts from different banks with a single app. So if that was done only with a small part of data and a small part of the banking sector, imagine how big the step forward and the revolution could be if we share the data with more financial services and even with more sectors. But here, of course, the important aspect to remember, and this is something that the Commission highlight as well, is that the ultimate person, or let's say part, to decide whether you share the data or not, it will be the customer. So you will have always full control of your data and your information, and you will decide what you want to share and what you don't want to share. So of course, I mean, the goal is to have more services, but always having control of your data.
A question. Sorry, I'm a customer, and I got this impression that, for example, my banking data were secure on a particular platform that I enter by various means with passwords and what have you. But somehow you're talking about sharing data across services, financial and non-financial, public utilities, and so on and so forth. I don't know where is my control?
The control, I mean, it will depend on the design, but of course, the control is start by authorizing you, whatever bank, to share your data with third parties. So I don't know how, I mean, because first of all, what we're talking about here, it's a strategy. So it's not even a legislative proposal. So we don't know. We don't know the details of what is going to come. The Commission, with the crypto assets proposal, was a proper regulation, but the digital service, the digital finance strategy, it's a strategy. So the Commission basically just set the goal, and it said that, for example, they want to review the Payment Service Directive too. They want to review next year. And in 2022, they want to put forward the open finance proposal. But they don't know, I mean, they didn't say how ambitious they want to be. They mentioned that they want to do not only with the finance sector, but also with other sectors. But we don't know how ambitious that aspect will be. And we don't know, and depending on how ambitious you will be, that will have an impact, of course, on the authorization and the authentication process.
Now, I had a question since you mentioned you referred to a decision still to be made regarding the perimeter of these open finance initiative. But when it comes to data, the EU is supposed to be a leader in the world. But on the other hand, we're saying the EU must catch up. Where are we really in terms of regulating or understanding? Because maybe we're just trying to understand these new payment methods and these new currencies, digital currencies, as compared to other regions.
So that's a good question, because that gives me the opportunity to mention something that I forgot. As you said, we are a reference as a regulatory jurisdiction. For example, as you said, we were the first ones to regulate, and we became not the first one, but we became a source of inspiration with the European Data Protection Regulation because of how comprehensive the rules were. More or less the same when it comes to artificial intelligence. Now, with the crypto asset actually proposal, we are the first major jurisdiction to regulate these digital assets. So, what I said is that Europe has a lot to catch up on digital services. I mean, because of we don't have big players like Silicon Valley. We don't have such a big pool of data like the Chinese, and with so small or so little concerns about how the data is handled. So we have different characteristics or features in Europe that either because of our, let's say, human rights concerns of the development of our own company, let's say, business ecosystem, we are behind compared to the big players like the US or China. I mean, the good thing is that and this is actually the Commission's view, is that if we have the right set of rules from the beginning in something in this innovative market, we will attract companies because that will give them, let's say, clarity on what are the rules of the game, and that will help them to understand how they can, let's say, grow. I mean, so they don't have this legal uncertainty. So they will be working on a market which is already regulated, but is not killing innovation.
Interesting. Now, I had also had a question before we come to an end. We have just a few, very few minutes. If we are creating more digital, well, more currencies, not physical ones, but digital ones, how are we going to handle the issue of inflation? This is creating a lot of money. I mean,
Well, we, I mean, we, I'm pretty sure that one of the issues that precisely the central bank is assessing is the impact of these digital euros on inflation. I mean, but we have to remember that, and that will be, for example, I mean, I'm pretty sure that that will be a discussion for another program, that currently, I mean, the inflation levels are at very low. I mean, inflation is at very low levels, and it's not only because of the crisis, because of this pandemic. It was already like that for several years, and here central bankers are discussing. I mean, what's going on? I mean, why the inflation levels are so low? Because of the productivity models that we have, the impact of this more e-commerce and digital economy, but also I mean, there are many theories there, but one of the outcomes of this situation has been a review of the central bank's mandates and goals. And this is something that the Federal Reserve already did, and this is something that the central bank is doing. So everything is coming at the same time. So I mean, the central bank's sacrosanct mandate is, of course, always price stability. But the key question is how you, let's say, turn this into an operative goal. And here, I mean, the operative goal was an inflation of around 2%, but now maybe because of, let's say, because of the current, I mean, economic futures, maybe you could overshoot the 2%, considering that the economy is working at with this very, let's say, low growth levels, and at the same time, inflation is not picking up. So you can even overshoot that in order to, let's say, temporarily to boost the economy without being, let's say, afraid that this is going to create an inflation problem.
Well, thank you. Well, I keep in mind this idea of discussing the death of inflation and the
Yes.
mysterious death of inflation for another time. Thank you very much. We
Thank
have
you
come
very
to the end.
much. Yes.
Bye-bye then.
And we'll bye.
Bye-bye.